Did you want to see me in here?
Paul, good, you're here. Come in here.
How's the band sound?
Wonderful.
All right, well, Lily, call. When you get a chance, just call her back.
I will.
Now, I've got the opening edited beautifully. Everybody
yes?
here loves it. And I'm going to show it to you in 1 second. Oh, the reaction stuff is tremendous. And
great.
We'll just put that up in 1 second, Rip. Get it ready. But I want to discuss you for 1 second. The title.
Paul Simon Show.
Yeah.
Paul Simon Special.
Well, stay open to this now. The Paul Bridge Over Troubled Water Simon Special.
What's the purpose? I don't get it.
The recognition factor.
Well, you don't say it. The Barry I Write the Songs Manilow Special,
no.
or the Neil I Am I Said Diamond Special.
Well, there's only one Barry Manilow or Neil Diamond, but
and
I mean, there's a Paul Simon who's a painter. There's
one,
a Paul Simon who's a politician.
Yes, but it would not be very likely that they would have their
own
special.
Well, these days, just about anybody gets their own special.
Edition. Nice to see everybody. It is truly a beautiful day in New York City. I have no idea what the temperature is because I haven't left the house, but I can see it is a lovely day after a horrible rainy day, disgusting day yesterday. I am looking out, and I am looking out over one of those buildings that I've been talking about for years that blocked my view of Venus. One of those buildings that they built on Roosevelt Island a few years ago that blocked my view of the Silver Cup Studio sign. I've been talking about it for years, and I finally actually went there, and I will explain all of that shortly. Just wanted to say hello. I'll tell you, I got a nice night's sleep last night, which is rare for me. I don't know why, but I think I slept until noon, you know, Friday being my day off. And I've been so stressed. I've definitely been stressed because of the work that I am doing or not doing, and whatever the case may be, I am definitely getting a little bit stressed, and April's just going to get worse, as in next week when I will come back and explain it to you. I will be doing that lecture at my mother's, I still can't believe it, at my mother's old age home. No, that's not what we call it these days. It's whatever the fuck it is. But I will be doing a lecture series there for 3 weeks in a row. So that's why I told her, listen, I'm not coming down today. I'm going down there for 3 weeks in a row. It's going to be really tough on me. In fact, I'm going down 3 weeks in a row. And that Thursday after, of course, we're going down for her stupid birthday 2 days later. And then going back to Beth for Passover. Oh, it's going to be an all road a month long ceremony. And that is not a good place to be because she is the worst. Also, this I'm recording on the few days before Easter Sunday. I actually have off that day of work, if you can believe it. Isn't that the funniest thing? I usually put the bonus show together on Sunday, so I'm not going to have a bonus show. I don't even have that many photos, so it's not that big of a deal. I'm going to skip the bonus show this week, and obviously we'll pick up again next week, and we'll go until the end of May. Yeah, and I've got to compile what I did. Now, as some of you may know, our lovely listener Marcy came to New York City with her friends, her cousin and daughter, friends, and you know I got to see them and everything. And they took a bunch of pictures. So let me get those together, compile them, and then We'll put it all together, show you some stuff in the bonus show, stuff that I guess Marcy's okay with, where I guess her hair's not flat, which I never noticed. But you know how girls are, and quite frankly, I'm the exact same way. So how dare I? But I will tell you, so I guess we'll just jump off there where those guys came into town on Sunday, and I met them by my house, and their plan was to take the tram, which I live near, the Roosevelt Island tram, over to Roosevelt Island. The most obnoxious part about that whole thing is Marcy telling me, like, we're going to take the tram there and go right to Brooklyn from there. And I go, well, Roosevelt Island doesn't go anywhere near Brooklyn. And she goes, but these YouTubers told me it did. And I'm like, well, I'm telling you, as a person who's lived here for 30-some years, that Roosevelt Island does not connect to Brooklyn in any way. And she's like, no, but these YouTubers. I'm like, all right, I'm going to start over again. I mean, it was the most annoying. She just kept saying, but these YouTubers. And we were all laughing at her. It was kind of funny when you are listening to YouTubers when somebody is telling you. Now, there was other things on Roosevelt Island she was telling me about that I didn't know because I haven't been to Roosevelt Island in 20 years. I mean, nobody goes to Roosevelt Island. There's a tram and you go, and if you live there, you go. But now it's become a little touristy. There's stuff that they built a Starbucks. That's about it. Otherwise, I didn't take them on the tour of Roosevelt Island, but yet I did. So let me just explain. So we go to the Roosevelt Island tram on a Sunday. What was it? 6 o'clock, still daylight, thank goodness. And we go to the tram, and there's a line to get on the tram. I've never seen that. So I don't know what's going on. She kept saying it was a spring break thing. I don't know what it is. There was a goddamn line to get on the tram. That's just not normal. Or maybe it is for tourists, I guess. I just never noticed it, and it's been a long time since I think the last time I took it was to take my nieces when they were 10, and now my niece is a doctor. So, all right, I guess I don't know what I'm talking about. Nobody gives a shit about Roosevelt Island, and I hate Roosevelt Island because they built those fucking structures that I look right into on a daily basis. On a daily basis, I look right into. So I see the line, and I'm like, no. I am not waiting on a line to go to Roosevelt Island. I'll do whatever they want because I know they're tourists. And you know what the worst part about when you live here and people come from out of town and they want to do touristy stuff, there's nothing you can do. And if you're a New Yorker, you're just annoyed at going to the Empire State Building or the Statue of Liberty and all that kind of stuff because you're just like, well, it's kind of fun because I never get to do this unless somebody's in town. But then waiting with the tourists and all the people, you're like, ugh. I try and avoid this in my daily life. I'm not blaming them for anything. It's fine. I chose to take them there only because I thought there wouldn't be a line, but there was. So I'm like, why don't we go eat first? We'll come back. The odds of there. And if you guys don't mind going when it's dark, and they're like, no, we don't care. They were very up for anything, and they were nothing but nice. We went out for dinner, and I took them to that place, what's it called? Mimi's, where the food's not very good, but they have a piano player and Sinatra playing all the time. And I think they loved it. So I think it was the right place to go, kind of a little down Second Avenue by my house. And it was very easy. And we had a really nice time. And we had that same waiter as last time. I don't know if you remember. The guy was so crazy. He gave us free carafes of wine. I noticed his motorcycle was there. So he was nothing but nice. And we had a really nice dinner. Whether it was good or not, it really didn't matter. I explained to them this isn't the, you know, nice dinner you have when you come to New York, but it's a pleasant experience. And I think they all agreed and everybody was in a pretty good mood. And then we left to go back to the Roosevelt Island tram and go to Roosevelt Island. And that was much better, much easier to get onto. I mean, how many times I got to tell her daughter, get your Metro card ready. Get it ready. She got this huge bag. She's digging deep for it and we're all waiting. The tram's going to leave, and she's like, oh. But, you know, you tell them that, you tell them to bring a fucking ID, right? Oh, my God. Who doesn't bring an ID? You know how that drives me nuts. Who doesn't carry their ID around after 2001? Am I right? Who doesn't carry their ID around? I don't know what's going on. It's crazy for people not to carry a form of identification. I don't get it. These kind of things, of course, make me crazy. Trying to let it go makes it even more difficult for me. But I did, because everybody's very nice. You can't blame people. Well, no, see, that's the thing. You can blame people for coming out of town. Why don't you carry an ID? Even if you, I don't care if you're in Kentucky or Indiana, wherever you're from, why aren't you carrying an ID with you at all times? So that, of course, doesn't make any sense. Whatever. We get on the tram. They're enjoying it. It's a lovely experience. It's a beautiful, well, it's cold, but it's still a nice night. It's a crisp evening. And we immediately go to the Starbucks, which we found, which I didn't know. And it was open. And it was like 9 o'clock. And I'm like, wow, the odds of anything being open here would be slim. And it was 9 o'clock and we went to Starbucks. And I'm telling you, it was like the guy who was working there was so nice. I felt like we were actually in Kentucky or somewhere else, not New York City. This guy at Starbucks was so pleasant. It didn't add up. He's like, I mean, it was really weird. And he was very nice. Got a nice cup of coffee. And then we sat outside for a little bit, which of course is amazing. I'm definitely going to go there, I think, during the nice weather and sit around there because you're actually looking at the Manhattan skyline, which is the place to be, instead of looking at Queens or Roosevelt Island skyline. You know, when you live here, you get to see Queens and Brooklyn. That's not as fun as the people who actually live on Brooklyn who get a view of the Manhattan skyline, or if you live in Hoboken or something, you know. So it's so weird to sit outside, even though it was a little cold, but it was a very pleasant time and a wonderful seating arrangement at this Starbucks in Roosevelt Island. Go figure. So I thank you, Marcy, for showing me that Roosevelt Island is okay now, you know, to just, you know, hang out for a little bit. It's not okay completely. So then we went under the bridge to go, and I'm like, I got to check out this place, what I always see in my building, which I thought was a coffee shop. I thought for years it was a coffee shop. The lights are always on. I mean, I'm telling you, I can see this place when my pillows are propped up and I'm sitting there reading in bed. I can see this building, which I never knew what it was. I actually thought it's something with Cornell, so I thought it was a school or a hospital or something, and I don't know. I still don't know what it is. But what now I do, it's a hotel. I never thought it was a hotel. I never heard about a hotel on Roosevelt Island. It's a goddamn hotel. I walked in and I go, and I was like, is this the place? I thought it was a coffee shop. And the people there were nothing but nice. It was really odd. And I'm like, can I ask you, what is this place? And she's like, it's a hotel. It is? And it's full of like library books and stuff like that. I would never have guessed it was a hotel. And the girl was like, really nice. And I'm like, how long has it been here? Because I hate this place because it blocks my view. But I live right across the street here. And she's like, it's been about 3 years. I'm like, right, 3 years, three or four years. It started going up. I've been complaining about it forever. And I'm like, well, she's like, yeah, we have this really great rooftop. You know, and I'm like, you do? Can we go up there? She's like, yes, as long as you have ID. Anyway, she's like, you can't take your coffee there. I'm like, well, can I leave it there? And this girl was so nice. She like, let us leave the coffee there. She put like a napkin over it and stuff to make sure nobody messed with that. I mean, it was really sweet. And we went up to the rooftop, me and Marcy and her friend and her cousin, rather, Stephanie and her daughter, G. And we went up there and we couldn't even believe it, that they just didn't care. There's a bar up there. I think they serve food. It was amazing. I have a picture of me, of course, being up there and making a face like, ugh, I can't believe, you know, blocking my view with my body. You can look right into my apartment from there. It's so weird, but the view is amazing. I mean, what a great place to take a date. Go figure. I mean, it's perfect. And in the nice weather, it'll be nice. We went outside anyway the whole time, but you can sit inside. And just, it's really nice. I don't know how much the drinks are. I'm sure they're expensive, but it was a really good rooftop bar that I don't know how many people know about. Kind of perfect once the warm weather comes again. I just couldn't believe it. When you complain about stuff for so much and then somebody turns you on to something new, you feel bad. Like I have to apologize to somebody. I don't know who. I mean, I was up for going to Roosevelt Island, but I just kept telling those guys, hey, it sucks over there. Just don't expect anything. It's stupid. And meanwhile, turned out to be like the greatest thing ever. I don't know about the rest of their trip, but for me, it was the greatest. I'm looking at it right now. I'm looking about where I was on the roof. I can see exactly where I was. If I've used my binoculars, I can see myself waving. If somebody's in my house and I say, go up there, I can see you waving. I could be talking on the phone. I'm like, yeah, I totally see you. You're wearing a pink outfit with a little Disney logo on it. I mean, I can see that close with my naked eye with the binoculars. It would be even easier. I mean, it's really unbelievable. And that was something else. And then we came back to the city. Still, that tram makes me nervous. I'm not good with rides like that. that have, you know, when you hit the wheels, it kind of evens out and then it shakes, you know, like makes me really nervous. But of course, we got back perfect. And then I took them to PJ Clark's, which was great because I don't know if they wanted it. I was just showing them this is a really interesting place. It's been around for a long time. And then one of their tourists told them, like, there's only one standing bar left in the city. And they said it was PJ Clark's. I'm like, oh, we've been there. So I'm glad that they realized that was a pretty cool place. It's hard to explain to people, like, hey, this is a really cool place. But then you don't know it in its context. It's been around for so long. We had just a drink or two. And then I walked them down towards the Grand Central location. Meanwhile, I thought I saw Miranda Cosgrove, who is iCarly, sitting at the bar. It was a girl that looked just like her, except that she was a little bit heavier. I really thought it was her. I didn't stop thinking it was her. There's no reason she would have been in New York. She was just too heavy because I've been watching the new iCarly and she's so stick thin. So it probably wasn't her, but it really looked like her. And it was only like six of us at the bar at this point. But I was almost going to go up to her, but I'm like, nah, it can't be her. It's impossible that it's her. I don't think she ever comes to New York City. And if she did and sat at that bar and just hung out, she would actually be the coolest person of all time. Especially when the documentary I saw, I don't know if you've seen this yet, the Quiet on the Set, the Nickelodeon movie about how horrible Dan Schneider is and what the poor kid, Drake Bell, and what that pervert did to him. I watched the whole four parts. I was riveted. You know, I know all those shows. I know the whole history of Nickelodeon and Dan Schneider. So I was fascinated to hear. And, you know, first you hear people like Dan Schneider was this way on the set and this way, but he wasn't perverted. But he was like this way. I'm like, you know, these people, I was getting angry. I'm like, God, you kid. Well, yeah. Okay. He was a little mean to the kids. I guess that's not cool, but it's weird hearing people talk about bosses that are mean because that's just the way it is. And for years we've all dealt with that and it sucks. Now what he did to women was completely unacceptable. Just treating them like shit, not perverted stuff or anything. But in fact, I'm friendly with one of the girls who was working on, I guess, All That or The Amanda Show. She married one of my friends, and she's a big fan of Turbocharge. I didn't realize she was on the show. Maybe we should have her on at least the Tuesday show or something. Talk more about it, because it's real. Oh, boy, did he fuck over those chicks. So that is uncool. And there's a lot of uncool stuff about him. And it's funny, because I remember watching some of these shows and seeing stuff that I'm like, boy, that's very sexual. And I'm like, that's probably just me thinking that's sexual. But then they mentioned when certain things were happening, like when they'd squirt lotion on somebody. Like, they mentioned it too. And I'm like, okay, thank God. Because I thought I was just reading it that way, but there was some subtext to it. The weird part is I could probably see myself, if I was then trying to doing that, thinking that was hilarious, that nobody would know. So, yeah. The other part, though, with Drake Bell and this fucking rapist guy who was allowed on the set, and especially, I don't know if you've heard, all these people who wrote letters on the other guy's behalf, not knowing it was Drake Bell that he had molested. He just finally came out after all this time, and then they feel like shit. And I just hope there's repercussions for these people that stood up for him and, you know, basically called out Drake Bell and said he's lying. I mean, wow. It's just like what happened in my building when I had to get one of the doormen fired and everybody was writing letters on his behalf because they didn't know the whole story. So remember, folks, big lesson. If you're writing a letter on somebody's behalf and you don't want to be a dick and you want to do something right, just make sure you know the whole story. Get your information. Because, you know, my friend Bob actually was one of those people. And he wrote, he didn't know the facts. And when I told him, he was mortified. So if you're writing a nice letter to be polite and you really love somebody, just make sure you have all the facts before you defend somebody. I know, it's horrible that you want to defend a friend. Yes, all I keep thinking about, and I think I've told you guys before, when I was in college, and there was that guy, Bandana Bob. He was our janitor. And I just didn't think anything of it. It's so weird. But he was a pervert, you know, or whatever you would call it, a predator. I kept breaking into his janitor closet all the time, because that's what I would do back then. I broke into stuff all the time. That's, I loved burglarizing places. I wouldn't steal anything. I would just break in. I love breaking in. Found his notebook of rape tables and things he was going to do to the girls and murders and hanging them and stuff. I was just, isn't this hilarious? And I showed everybody on the floor. Isn't this hilarious? Can you imagine this? That's me. Isn't this funny? Look at this guy. He's crazy. And one of the kids goes, dude, this is totally unacceptable. I'm calling the cops. And I'm like, no, don't do that. He's a great guy. He's a great guy. I fucking A. I didn't know anything about that. I mean, maybe he was a great guy. Maybe he didn't do anything. I don't know. This kid called the cops. He did the right thing, apparently. The cops came. They asked me what else I knew. They asked me if he reached out. I said he did reach out. And he said, can you just tell them I'm a nice guy? And I really liked the guy a lot. You know, I was like the Anthony Michael Hall. I was friends with the janitor. I was friends with Carl. I'm friends with everybody like that. Security guards, janitors, right? That's what I do. Yeah, he got taken away. I finally found him working at a hotel in Ithaca somewhere and said hello and everything was fine because I don't think he had any charge. I don't think he did anything. But nowadays, you know, they saw a book like that. Obviously, you'd call somebody, so I'm just as guilty as anybody else. I didn't do anything about it. I probably made it worse. And this one kid, I don't remember who he was. We were upset that he was calling him out. And boy, what a dick I am, huh? We didn't know about that stuff back then. And now we do. And that's why in 2003, when people are writing letters about somewhere they don't have all the facts, you should, and these are adults. They're not 22-year-olds. They're adults that are working in television, and you should know better. And the story of this poor Drake Bell. Oh, boy. And I get it, because again, you know, I went back. I was talking about this last week where I was getting groomed. I've told you this before. By ironically, guys, a guy from ABC and a guy from NBC, and they were grooming me. I didn't know. I did not know. I was the same age as I was with the janitor. You know, maybe I was 3 years older. So I was 21. Yeah, maybe a year older. And these guys were grooming me. I didn't realize. I don't know what I would have done if one of them had actually made a move. You know, and this Drake Bell's just like, I'm stuck. My parents are relying on my salary. I don't know what to do. I'm frozen. You know, I don't want to ruin the rest of my career. I get it. It's horrible. The poor guy. A fascinating couple of things.
Pardon me, sir, but could you...
At long last, my dream come true.
Hey, Doc, wait! I want to ask you something. Pardon me, Doc, but could you rent me a U-Dry flying saucer? I've got to get back to the Earth.
The Earth? Oh, the Earth will be gone in just a few seconds.
Oh, well, don't bother then. No point in wasting money on a flying saucer when the Earth's not gonna... pardon me again, Doc, but just what did you mean by that crack about the Earth being gone?
Oh, I'm going to blow it up. It obstructs my view of Venus.
It does? That's a shame.
Where's the kaboom? There was supposed to be an earth-shattering kaboom. The Illudium Pew-36 explosive space modulator. That creature has stolen the space modulator.
So on Monday, I go to work and have maybe the worst breakfast I've ever had there before. I don't know what happened, but they weren't ready, and the normal guy, Bruno, wasn't there, and something went wrong. And it was the worst breakfast they ever had. It was so, you know, that's one of the things I totally look forward to about going to work. That's how they get people to come to the office. Like, well, I'll look forward to breakfast, the free breakfast. You know, I've been talking about that forever. And it was just bad. Everything was bad. And then I talked to my boss, and she was like, hey, did you have the breakfast today? Wasn't it bad? I'm like, yes. I thought maybe it was just me. Like, the eggs were bad. The oatmeal was bad. I don't know how you messed that up. Everything was in disarray. The next day when I came in, I found out that the guy who's usually working there who makes everything good, Bruno, he quit. He walked out. Why did he walk out? The most hilarious of reasons. they implemented a salad bar, which I guess they haven't had since COVID. Maybe they used to have that before COVID. Obviously, they took it out. COVID. They implemented a salad bar Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And this guy was so angry that he had to prep the salad bar, he quit. He walked. He'd been there for like, I don't know, 20 years. He's like, salad bar? Yeah, you can you can stuff it. And he walked right out. I'm not fixing no salad bar. And it's hilarious. And it's hilarious only because there's a guy who makes, who usually makes the salads and he makes the sandwiches. And he's angry all the time. So much so where I've just been like, I'm not getting a salad. The only thing I'm going to get is lettuce. And can you give me a package of French dressing? That way he won't get angry at me. He hates making salads. He just can't stand his job. And it's obvious. He's a nice guy. He's like a really nice guy. But he just hates his job. He hates making salads. So they put in the salad bar. I go, oh, that guy's going to be so thrilled. He got a salad bar. He's going to be so happy. So this guy couldn't be happier that there's a salad bar. He doesn't have to make salads anymore. And the other guy was so furious he took off. The other guy was that was happy cooking for everybody. He got the salad bar. He took off. I mean, how funny is that? That the salad bar made the one guy that was happy miserable and the guy that was miserable happy. Then on Monday, I went to go get a salad. I'm like, where's the salad bar? Oh, they don't have it on Mondays. And he had to make me a salad. And he was furious again. But no, I just asked for lettuce. I mean, that's great stuff. And of course, it was juicy gossip that I got to spread around because not a lot of people know. You know, I got the information from an undisclosed source. And who doesn't like that kind of stuff when you're working at a regular job? Juicy gossip. Everybody loves it.
What have I done? What was I thinking? I wanted Wi-Fi, so I went out on stage. I'm such a fool. I'm out of the business. Yes, it's time to part ways. I'm out of the business. Guess I'll have to do plays. I'm out of the business.
Whoa, Leah, stop. Wait, you're not out of the business. You just go backstage, relax, and I'll get the show back on track, and we'll let you know when it's time for you and Jonathan Groff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, Jimmy.
No. It's Jonathan Groff. No, Jonathan, I was just saying your name. It doesn't mean that you're supposed to come out here.
Oh. I didn't actually hear you say my name. I was just wondering if you knew where the bathroom is. Is it that bucket backstage?
What? No.
Of course not. Yes. Unrelated, just don't look in that bucket, please. So what's going on out here?
I'm in the middle of the show.
Oh, my God! You're in the middle of a taping?
Yeah.
I can't believe this. I've just completely ruined your show.
What? No, you haven't ruined the show. It's fine. Just go backstage, and I'll call you out later.
What have I done? What was I thinking? Nature called, so I answered. And now nobody will answer my calls. I'm out of the business. No more champagne or cigars. I'm out of the business. Guess I'll go on Dancing with the Stars. I'm out of the business.
Please, stop. Jonathan, stop. Everyone, stop. Neither of you are out of the business. It's all fine. Can you please just go and wait until it's your turn to come out?
Sure, Jimmy.
Sorry, sir.
Yeah, sorry.
So the big plan was that I was going to meet Marcy and her crew right outside my building. We're going to walk to the cellar, and they're going to be on the show. And then we're going to have dinner, and then me and Alon and maybe Mike are going to go to Todd Barry's birthday party, which was at the Beauty Bar on 14th Street on the east side. And that was the big plan. So it was a big night for me, which is going to be again tonight, this Tuesday coming up. It's going to be another one of those days. So I'm saying, what am I going to do with my backpack? You know, I don't want to carry my, because I'm working late on Wednesday on purpose so I can sleep later, so I can stay out later because I'm going to this party. I don't want to carry my computer the whole time. That's going to be really annoying being at this party with my computer. And if I put it somewhere, who knows what could happen with my bag and the computer and stuff, because I got to bring it home for work for the weekend and all that kind of stuff. And I was obsessed with figuring out how to work this. And I decided, you know what? I'm going to pay for a messenger. I'm going to pay for an Uber to take my knapsack home. And what a brilliant plan that was. So I had it all planned out. I'm leaving at exactly 4:05. I'm going to walk out that building. I'll wait for Marcy. Marcy doesn't show up. Boy, was I furious. I mean, I was like, my boss can tell you, the people I work with, they were like, what are you so stressed about? I'm meeting people right after work, right after work. I mean, I could have hung out a little bit and then not worried. And I was just like, and you know, I do this every Tuesday. So I have it down to a system. And if somebody messes with the plan, I mean, what are you just not listening to this podcast? This is somebody that listens to this podcast religiously. Even if you're 17, 20 minutes late, you don't know that's going to screw up my head. And I'm just sitting there waiting outside, and they're like, we're not there yet. We're actually on a boat. And I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me. I mean, you've got to be kidding me. And I tried to relax because I really didn't want to take it out on these very lovely people. And I'm just a dick, and I can't. It's very difficult for me to control myself. I was not in my Jessica Dan character. I didn't think I needed to be. So I just wasn't thinking about it. Oh, my God. I was just like waiting, and I keep looking at my watch, and I'm like, why did I rush everything? I could have just really taken my time. I made everybody crazy at work because I thought they were going to be waiting outside. I don't want to keep these people waiting outside. Apparently, I don't get the same respect. It was really upset. You know, and then it's just the excuses like, well, we got on this line. I'm like, I don't give a shit. You know, you're supposed to be there at 4 o'clock. You know me. It's like you don't even listen to the podcast. This isn't like somebody who just doesn't know me. I mean, technically, even though we're just meeting for the first time. And by the way, let me just say, Marcy is a delight. So, you know, I'm trying to really, because she's so sweet a person. I don't want to be a dick, but I am a dick. And I try really hard not to be. But again, you know, if you know what it takes, I got to put myself in a fucking trance. So it was really difficult. And then we walked uptown, and I thought they would like that, you know, to walk up to the cellar. Because you're seeing a whole, they're not going to Tribeca or Soho or anything. So let's take them through. And we walked all the way up to the cellar. We hung on my bar for a little bit. My friend Todd had a little drink and then went over to the show where we met Alon and Mike. And they met Mike for the first time, who they were actually taking to Billy Joel on Thursday because Alon and I could not go. Well, I couldn't go mostly because I teach on Thursdays. What are you going to do? Apparently it was like an awesome show where Seinfeld came out and Sting. And am I mad that I missed it? Of course I'm upset that I missed it. Of course I'm upset that I missed it. But what can I do? I just found out for next semester, one of the Thursdays is Rosh Hashanah. So I cannot have class then. I cannot. I just can't. Even if I don't practice, I just, it's that same thing I tell Rachel. Well, how could you work on Yom Kippur? I know you're not religious, but it's just, there's something about it. You got to show respect for your fellow Jews, I guess. So I got to take off that day. I'm not happy about it, but at least I'll be planning in advance. Now I know nobody seems to care. Of course, if I had known what I know now, that the teachers just take off, the kids don't care, nobody gives a shit, I probably would have gone to Billy Joel or gone to Jeff's thing, one or the other. But what are you going to do? Anyway, we had a lovely show. If you saw it on Tuesday, we really had a terrific time talking. Everybody was great. We really had a nice night. Then we went right downstairs to the Olive Tree, had a really terrific dinner. And I think they were really happy with being there and having a good time. I was like, you know, I was thinking, where are we going to go for dinner? I'm like, what am I talking about? Let's go to the Comedy Cellar. Especially when I went to the manager. I'm like, hey, can me and Alon and Mike get our discounts? And they're like, yeah, well, Alon already gets one, but I'm never sure about mine. So we got a discount. So, oh, boy, half off. Even better. I didn't even think about that. I'm like, oh, that'll even be better. So, yeah, we had a really good time, and we were drinking. I had scotch and wine and the meal with Alon and I, and I think Stephanie too, and maybe Mike. Mike had chicken. We all had steaks. They had amazing steaks and mashed potatoes, and I wasn't totally full where I needed to go. I knew I was going to somewhere else, and it was great. We said goodbye, and Alon and I walked over to Todd Barry's birthday, which was fantastic. And I saw Rachel there, and I saw all these people I never get to see. And the most important person I saw was this guy, Jonathan Groff, who you may know his name from Broadway, but it's a different Jonathan Groff. Jonathan Groff, writer and showrunner that I've known for 30 years. He used to be the head writer of Conan. And, of course, my friend at Montclair State, Guy, the other professor, who my boss, knows him. And I could talk like, hey, I'm working with Guy. Like, oh, I love Guy. So it's great. But this guy, Jonathan Groff, is so nice. And you will see pictures on the bonus show of me and him, even though he's half cut off, me and Todd. In fact, these pictures are incredible. It's pictures of who did I see? The guy, Jim Gaffigan and Chris Rock and Todd and then me and Jonathan Groff. I'm so glad I made the cut of photos. There's six photos. Mostly celebrities, and then me and Jonathan Groff. So I was glad I made the cut. Really important to be in that picture. But Jonathan Groff is the greatest guy. And because his name, and if you know or don't know, is very synonymous with a very, very popular Broadway star. I mean, actually almost a living legend of Broadway at this point. And of course, these are two different worlds, so it usually doesn't get mixed up. He told me the story that he was going to LA where he lives, and a chauffeur was sitting there, you know, an Uber driver, whatever it was, with a sign said Jonathan Groff. And Lea Michele came off the same flight. Lea Michele from Glee and Funny Girl came off and said, sir, I don't want to bother you, but I promise you Jonathan Groff is not on this flight. And they're like, oh, that's okay. He's coming from today. He's coming today. She's like, no, I promise you, he's not even in California. Sir, he is my best friend. I just left him in New York. I promise you, you're waiting for the wrong. And then Jonathan Groff comes over. Hey, bitch. Hello. There's two Jonathan Groffs, you little. That's what's better. I told my sister that right away. She's like, oh, my God, I'm telling everybody. I mean, sir. I am best friends with Jonathan Groff. He is not coming through those doors. So that is hilarious. This guy's the best. We're basically, as soon as he comes back, having him on the Tuesday show. So you'll get to meet him and you'll get to see what a terrific person he is. Quality writer, so smart. I know he's working on Blackish. I don't remember what the show he is working on now, but he's always got something going on. Great guy. Was helpful to me when I was doing stuff when he was on Conan, and I've just really always enjoyed him, and so that's why it was so awesome to see him. And by the way, Alon's mother made me humatashen for Purim, the Jewish holiday of Purim. A humatashen is a tri-cornered kind of like a hat, like a revolutionary hat, that is a cookie with either prune or apricot or chocolate, as his mom puts in, inside, like a filling inside. It is absolutely delicious. My grandmother used to make them. I could eat 30 of them in one sitting. She only made prune. Alon's mother mixes it up, and I only thought I liked prune. I didn't even think I liked prune, but I thought I only liked prune. And then Alon's mother made them with apricot, which I never thought I'd like, but I love it. Because the dough is really good, too, so it doesn't really matter. And the chocolate is sick. And it's like a tricolored hat, and it's just so mushy and delicious. And Alon's mother made them. He gave them to me on Tuesday. I ate some of them on the show or before the show. And then I even gave a couple out at the party to Todd. And I think Seth Herzog, who works on The Tonight Show, I was talking to him. And then I was mad when I got home the next day. I wanted some more. And I just ate the last two I had, and I was mad that there wasn't more because they were so delicious. So that was a really terrific night, and I think Todd was very happy. In fact, maybe I'll just give him a call today because I think he was actually happy. You know, he's such a strange guy. We met Todd's brother that nobody knew he had. He goes, yeah, I've been hearing that a lot, that nobody knew he had a brother. And he's so nice. He looks just like him. It's so funny. And, of course, I've known Todd for over 30 years, and it is hilarious. I was happy to be here. You should see the guest list he had. It's just a celeb, John Hamm and Chris Rock, like I said, and Chappelle and all those people. And not a lot of them, not everybody showed, but he knows everybody and everybody loves him. And it was a really good time. I'm so glad I went. Not that I was thinking of not going, but I was also glad I went with Alon. Because I never even made it to the back of the room. I was just talking to people as they were coming by. So, you know, I got to see everybody and it was really super fun and I'm glad I was there. And then I remember I took the bus home. It was too late to walk. It was too cold. And I just wasn't in the mood. And I took the bus home. And it was so easy. I couldn't even believe it. Because I definitely didn't want to take a cab and Uber. Because I'm like, ooh, I just spent money on my knapsack being delivered to my house by a car I'm not even in. So I don't want to spend any more money. So it was great. I mean, the bus just came. I was on it. It never stopped. I stopped right at my stop. It was perfect. And then when I got home, and one of the idiot doormen was, I'm like, is it possible I have a knapsack waiting for me? And I'm like, oh, yes, you do. I'm like, oh. And then I saw it, and I'm like, the system works. Because I got to do it again tonight. Being Tuesday. Because the Comedy Cellar is having their party. So I walk in on Tuesday. I said, listen, I'm having some people for dinner here. And Liz goes, Juskow, the Cellar Christmas party is next week. And I'm like, okay. Because, it's a mandatory requirement that you attend. So I'm like, okay, so that's another Tuesday. Oh, my God, that's going to be really rough. Attell will not be on the show tonight. I'm sorry. He made other plans because he's got to promote the Netflix special, and apparently our show isn't a precedent. How do you like that? But we'll get him on eventually. Not that it matters. He's the worst guest anyway. What's he giving you? Nothing. Which, of course, is funny anyway, so it doesn't really matter. His Netflix special, I'm getting texts from everyone that knows that I know him saying it's the greatest special they've ever seen, except from, of course, Kevin Brennan, who's like, can you please tell this is the worst special I've ever seen and it's stupid? And I'm like, I know everybody hates Kevin Brennan, but God damn, he always gets me. That's funny. Everybody's saying, this is the best special ever, this is the best show. And then Kevin Brennan's like, this is the worst special I've ever seen. Please tell him. What are we going to do with that guy? I don't know.
Listen to your heart when he's calling for you.
Listen to your heart. There's nothing else you can do. I don't know where you're going, and I don't know why. But listen to your heart before you tell him goodbye.
Meanwhile, on Wednesday, the New York primaries are today, so I voted early. And because I am registered as a Republican, I have no choice but to vote for Trump, which is killing me. But I got lucky, and Nikki Haley's still on the ballot, so I voted for her. Her and Chris Christie are still on the ballot somehow, so I voted for her, so at least I was able to vote and get my voting in, because you don't want to not vote. And I don't know what it does when you vote for somebody who's not in the running anymore. You can only hope that there's a whole bunch of people like me that are voting Nikki Haley. And like, well, she really got a lot of votes. Maybe she should come back. I don't know. But there's no way I'm voting for Donald Trump. No fucking way. I'm so embarrassed. God, I go in there. There's nobody in there. They have early voting. Somebody's sleeping at the desk. And I'm the only one in there. Again, they're furious when they have to fill out the Republican ticket, which they're like, oh, I'm going to have to make you a brand new one. it's like, I think I'm the only one in New York. Obviously, give me a reason to change, please, because I'll tell you, I ain't changing after yesterday when Biden and Clinton and Obama were all in town and I almost couldn't park my car when I got home, you motherfuckers. Oh, that almost ruined my day. All three presidents were at Radio City Music Hall. Does anybody remember where I parked my car? Radio City fucking Music Hall right across the street. You got to be kidding me. What are the odds the president of the United States, the standing president, is going to be at Radio City Music Hall? Oh, my God. Was he seeing a production of Dumbo? Like in the movie 1941 when that guy was crying? Who was that guy? That general was crying at Dumbo. Oh, my God. Fuck. I almost got... If I hadn't left early, I don't even know what would have happened. Because they closed down 6th Avenue. But I left... I don't know. I left at 2 o'clock yesterday. Or did I leave earlier? I left at 1:50, and that probably wasn't even early. Boy, I got lucky. I mean, I think they closed that down 20 minutes after I left. I wouldn't have been able to get my car. It wouldn't have been that big a deal. I could have taken the train, but I'm just... But I wouldn't have made my appointment at 4:30. Oh, God. Fucking... What is the matter with me? I usually check the... I don't bother checking the street closures on a Thursday. I just think on a Thursday, I'm going to be fine. I didn't know the president was coming to town. God damn it. I never think to look at that. Oh, God, it's so annoying. It sucks living here so much. As a matter of fact, let me just read this to you. I found this in a New York Post article the other day. I couldn't believe it. How much single New York Cityers, that's what they said, NYCers, must make to live comfortably compared to the rest of the U.S.? You know I've been complaining about this for a while. If you're single and loaded, you can make it here. New York City recently took the top spot out of 25 major U.S. cities as the most expensive for a single person to live comfortably, being the key word. You guys know, as I talk about all the time, and I can't stand talking about being cheap and money and all that kind of stuff. I can't stand it. But now you can see why. I never get to live comfortably. I mean, I don't think a lot of us get to live comfortably, but in New York City... You know, it's very rare to live comfortably. You know, Woody Allen lives comfortably. A new analysis showed that a single person living in the Big Apple would need to make $138,000 just to cover a typical 50-30-20 budget. The standard budget breakdown covers 50% of a person's necessities, 30% for desired spending such as entertainment, and 20% towards savings or investment. Yeah, my breakdown, person's necessities, my breakdown is 50% is rent. Total 50% is rent. Forget savings and investments. It's not an option. So that leaves me 50% with not saving, obviously, for entertainment and everything else. You know, they're saying 50% is supposed to cover rent, cable, gas, phones, you know, 50%. Mine is 50. It's, you know, it's a fucking disaster. So, for example, a New York City single person would need an estimated $70,000 in wages alone to cover their necessities. When a single person living in other parts of the country, like Houston, would only need to make $75,000 if they want to live comfortably. Oh, that's a whopping $63,000 difference to someone in New York. The Big Apple has a reputation of being ridiculously expensive, with inflation climbing as high as ever in New York. And a poll showed that most New York City residents, as you know from this podcast, were set to leave within the next 5 years because of inflation. In America alone, a person would need, they're saying any other city, in America alone, a person would need $96,500 a year for comfortable living in any other major city. And we all know I make a pretty good living for what I do. If I lived anywhere else, I would be living quite comfortably. And don't think I haven't thought about moving to Houston, where Ashley is, marrying her, and living comfortably. However, could I get a job with these kind of wages that I get in New York somewhere else? No. So what are you going to do? Right? Hey, we all got these problems. I was just pointing it out again that I couldn't believe I read. I've said that makes me so happy that I'm not insane, because I know I make, now I got 3 or 4 jobs and it's still not enough. I'm not living comfortably. You know, and sometimes it gets even worse. But once in a while, I try and forget about finances, because I get very happy when I don't think about it. And I'm sure that's the same with all of you. Anyway, speaking of yesterday and the horrible president and all that kind of crap that was going, not the horrible president, I'm just saying the fact, I hate every president when they come to town. You know, I felt about Trump. I actually, you know, liked Trump at first, and then I hated him because his son lived across the street and his office was near my parking garage. You know, that enrages Dave Juskow more than Marcy being 17 minutes late. Although, really, it is on an equal basis. I think we all know that. That I'm equally as ticked as the president's son ruining my parking across the street as Marcy being 17 minutes late to meet me on a Tuesday. So I think that's why you enjoy the podcast. If you're equally enraged at the president of the United States having his office by your parking garage and a friend of yours meeting you being 17 minutes late to meet you, that's comedy. Folks, that is comedy. That's Larry David shit, right? That's some Curb Your Enthusiasm shit. That's why you love the podcast. Come on. That's hilarious stuff that I have to put myself into I have to put myself into a trance-like character to deal with somebody being 17 minutes late. That's fucked up. But with the president part, I'm just like, ugh. I'm like, what are you going to do? Oh, that's quality stuff. So let me tell you this. Oh, my God, we're 45 minutes in already. So a couple things. So yesterday, I'm going to tell you this story. That's what I wanted to tell you. I'm teaching Harold Ramis, because we went over 84, 85. Harold Ramis and John Hughes. And I'm teaching them, the two guys, how they formed 80s movies and how they also differ and how they go on they converge at one point on Vacation, the movie Vacation. John Hughes writes, Harold Ramis directs, and how they all came from National Lampoon. This will, of course, be in my book. And then how they go their separate ways. And the best part, and I think you'll like this part, is I was explaining the Simple Minds song, Don't You Forget About Me, and this is a big part of the book, and I think you'll like this. So I'm explaining to them that John Hughes was extremely, not just influential in the movies, but also his music in the movies define his movies. We know this. And John Hughes, we know his music was odd. It wasn't normal. I just showed them The Sure Thing. The soundtrack of The Sure Thing is The Cars, Jay Giles, Huey Lewis, right? The stuff you expect in an 80s movie where John Hughes was using the Thompson Twins and OMD, right? Because John Hughes was part of what we call the second British invasion. Duran Duran, Culture Club, the second British invasion, which is a thing in the 80s. So I was talking about The Breakfast Club and Don't You Forget About Me, which of course the class all knows. A legendary song that puts the movie in a place to an extra part of the stratosphere. And I was explaining how it got made and why it got made and all that kind of stuff. But then I told them about this song. I think you'll appreciate this interesting little tidbit about Don't You Forget About Me, of course, sung by Simple Minds. So John Hughes hires Kevin Forsey, who just won an Oscar for Flashdance by Irene Cara. What a feeling, ba-da-ba-ba-ba-ba, make it happy. He just wins an Oscar, and John Hughes is like, well, let's get that guy. He seems to get it. He can write a song for a crappy movie. So he's like, get him, and he's British. And John Hughes loves British stuff. And he goes, I'd like to use it. And he goes, and so he's like, I'd like you to write a song for this movie. Shows him the movie. And I show the kids the scene that inspired the song, which is a scene where Judd Nelson, Ally Sheedy's biting her nails. And Judd Nelson goes, I've seen you before. And he recognizes her from the hallways. And that apparently, that little tidbit scene sparked something in Kevin Forsey's mind. He goes, that's it. Don't You Forget About Me. And there's something about that one scene that got him to write this song, that inspired him to write this song. So he writes it, song the demo, but of course he's not singing, he's not a singer. You can actually hear the demo online. It's kind of fascinating. And he wants this little known Scottish band that he's familiar with called Simple Minds to sing it. He's like, I know this little band, this would be great for them. And John Hughes is like, oh, I've actually heard of them. That would be fantastic. I would love that. I want that. I don't want Huey Lewis to sing this song. And no offense to Huey Lewis, I want this. Simple Minds, I love the name. I love that they're Scottish. I love their sound. It's perfect. So they bring it to Simple Minds, Jim Kerr is the lead singer. And he's like, yeah, no. And he's like, no, this is going to be great. This is a movie soundtrack in America. You guys said you wanted to get to America. This would be great. Nah, we write our own stuff. But thanks very much. I just want an Oscar for Flet. That doesn't interest. No, we're good. So he's like, they don't want to do it. He's like, what do you mean they don't want to? John Hughes is like, what do you mean they don't want to do it? What are you talking about? So he goes, I'll tell you what I'll do. I never do this. I'll set up a screening for those guys in London. I'll set up a screening for this fucking obnoxious band, Simple Minds. They are Scottish. This is what they do. I'm not going to make it for you. I don't know what I'm accent. But you still can't beat me at the pipes.
I win.
That was a dirty bit of cheating.
Cheating? Why, that identical situation occurred in the New Hebrides Open. Kaduffo Glaze versus Fuddle in 1918. And what about Freitas versus Ginfritter? Bisbo versus Sturgeon in the Casablanca Amateur. Cheating indeed. Denied.
It is plain that the weight of evidence is greatly against me. But you still cannot beat me at the pipes. Try and top that.
He's like, I'm going to set up a screening. I never want anybody to see my... I'm going to set up a screening for these guys. He sets up a screening. They go to the screening. They come out of the screening. They're like, we enjoyed the film. But, yeah, we don't see it. We just don't see a song. No. They're like, what? Yeah, sorry, fellas. But... you guys don't know what you're talking about. This movie's going nowhere. Thanks anyway. Nobody can believe it. So they start talking to other people. They talk to Billy Idol. They talk to that idiot, Corey Hart. I wear my sunglasses at night so I can, you know. And they're like, this blows. Fucking Simple Minds. They're angry. I mean, what are we going to do? They don't want to do it. We've done everything we can. They don't want to do it. So they finally go to Chrissy Hynde. From the Pretenders, who, of course, as we know, is the coolest fucking human being on the face of the planet. Because I was telling the kids, I'm like, look, this chick is unbelievable. This is a woman in the 80s that formed her own band. Not this isn't the Go-Go's, it's all girl band, which, you know, is cool in a different way. This is a woman who formed her own band with guys, wrote all the songs, made all, you know, the hits, sang all the songs. I mean, she's fucking cool. And you remember my James Bond story. They let her do the Bond music, and they hated Aha, so they brought her in to fix it. I mean, she's cool. She's the epitome of cool. You know, her and Joan Jett are cool. But Chrissy Hynde's cooler in an even different way. And they give her the song, like, we're lying into the song, and she goes, oh, my God, this is fucking brilliant. First of all, let me tell you, she didn't see the movie. She goes, I love the idea of this movie. I love John Hughes. I love 16 Candles. I want to be a part of this movie. And this song you wrote, Kevin, is amazing. However, I'm pregnant. And I just don't... I'm really pregnant. And I just don't think I can give this song what it deserves at my all in my condition. But you know what you should do? You should show this to my husband. He would be perfect for this song. Now, I don't know if any of you know where I'm going with this. But as it turns out, Chrissy Hynde's husband is Jim Kerr from Simple Minds. So she shows him the song. He's like, what? This song again? Are you kidding me? Did they do this as a joke? What? He's like, all right, fuck it. Fuck it. I can't get rid of this song. This guy's got this fucking gold in his hand. He keeps throwing it away. It's hilarious. Isn't that the best story ever? He comes in, he hears it, he actually adds in a whole bunch of this. I'm not taking anything away from them. They added in the hey, 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 which we know we love. They added in the power chords, and history is made, and the Simple Minds is made, and that's why you've ever heard of them to this day. Thanks to that movie, these ungrateful pricks who still were angry 30 years later. Well, we didn't write it, so it's I'm like, oh my God, you guys, the only reason you had a second album was because of this song. I think they get it now, but I'm not sure. And if they do, it was still only like 5 years ago. They're like, well, maybe we can come to terms with, oh my God. Can you imagine them going to a concert and not playing this and thinking that people are going to come back ever? Talk about, I mean, just like getting handed this lottery ticket and you just keep like, nah. Now, there's probably a digit missing from the lottery numbers. I mean, I love that story. The kids loved it. I hope you did too. I know that sometimes when I tell you these kind of 80s tidbits, you like it. So that's definitely in the book, the John Hughes book I'm trying to write, which of course is stressing me out since it's due in like a month and I don't have anything ready except these little tidbits. So then I took my niece and one of my, my nephew and one of my students, the one who wants to make the documentary, I took him to the diner after. Because I wasn't going out. I thought I was going to Staten Island for that Sweet 16 I got to do with Steve. But he didn't need me. I mean, he needs me, but he let me off the hook that I didn't have to go to Staten Island after class, thank God. And Gabriel, I'm so sorry because I wanted to wear the green visor hat. I was already, right? I'm never going to be able to do it again. I'm always going to teach on a Thursday. So I took them to the diner on campus, which I love. I said, you guys want to go? And so we went. Food was some of the worst food I've ever had. Couldn't care less. Was expecting it. It was so much better last time. I don't know what happened this time. I had the same thing. It was awful. They hated it too, but we didn't care. We weren't expecting anything. We were having a good time. Watching my niece kind of flirt with a girl was fascinating. My nephew, oh my God. I keep thinking of that girl in my class as my niece, which is good, right? But seeing my nephew flirt with one of the kids in the class is interesting. Very interesting. I can't figure out his technique, except that maybe he's nervous, but I don't know. They both kind of zing each other, which is kind of cute. So I think there could be something there. But I don't know. Anyway, we had a really nice time. We walked her to her car, and then I went home. I got far in, and I knew the president was in town. And I said, I kept listening to the radio, and they said, well, maybe we'll close off 48th and 46th Street at some point. But everything was moving smooth. No traffic at the Lincoln Tunnel. I kept listening to the reports. I kept looking at the ways. It still says I'll be in about 16 minutes. I go through the tunnel. I go up. I say, I'm going to go up 10th Avenue. It's 10. Then all of a sudden, the ways goes crazy. It says I should go down 44th Street and then make a right on 6th Avenue. I'm like, what are you fucking talking about? I'm like, all right, something's wrong with the ways. And maybe, I don't know, the government might have had something to do with it. Who knows, right? The president's in town. And I'm like, no, I'm sticking with the traffic. I'm just going to keep up 10th Avenue and make my right on 56th Street, even though it's telling me to go to 58th Street. I'm like, I'm not buying any of this. And of course, as usual, I get to, and that's why it said, don't go down 56. I knew it. I get to 56th and 7th. And then not letting people go through. They're waving people away. They don't want people on 6th Avenue. And I'm like, and you know what this feeling of when you've almost gotten home? I know we talk about this all the time. You're almost there. I came all the way from New Jersey. I went through great lengths of stress and traffic and tunnels and New York City. And it's very stressful. Every week it's the same thing. It's very stressful. And all I can think about is being home and just, you know, wow, what a day. I mean, think about next week when I'm at my mother's first, then going there. I mean, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to just be home, watch TV, maybe play a game on my phone and just be comfortable, my pajamas, right? And you're half a block away, 11 o'clock at night, and you can't get there. And then what do? This isn't like going to your house in the suburbs. Where maybe you got to go around and get to your house. Or maybe you can park your car anywhere on the street and pick it up the next day. No. New York, if I can't make it there, I got to just ride around like in an airplane waiting to land. There's nowhere to go. I'm not paying for a garage somewhere else. Fucking nightmare. Half a block away. And I said, well, I'm going right at these two. This is what I do. I come up real close. They get out of the way because they see I'm about to barrel into them. They don't know me. I go in real close all the time. I'm like, fuck you. hey. And then I go out the window. And I'm like, I'm sorry. My parking garage is on this block. They're like, after 6th Avenue? Nope. Just before 6th Avenue. They let me go. Oh, fuck. I can picture it now. It's stressing me out now thinking about it. Just even the fact that you have to convince the cops that you're not lying. I have no proof. I live in the city. I have no proof. I park in that garage. You just have to be as polite as possible. Sometimes they usually let me go, but sometimes I gave them the full address and I'm like, no. I promise. I swear on the souls of my grandchildren. They don't particularly care for that imitation. Oh, then to go down 7th, and then where do you go, right? If I couldn't go, oh my God. I pulled in that garage and I just got getting that car. Oh, Like I couldn't catch my breath of the relief when I just parked the car, got my shit out, started yelling at the guy in the car. Oh, and then just I'm going home and I'm like, oh, like as if I just had a prostate exam. Like it was just like as if I was just in this major accident or something. Oh, like it was that stressful that there has to be like a relief. It's awful. And then I called my student and I'm like, oh, I mean, I didn't know who to call. Who would appreciate it? I didn't want to call my nephew. He's not going to get it. I go, she's like, you didn't want to call your nephew? And I'm like, nah, he wouldn't understand. And we hung up. She's like, good night, professor. Good night. Hey-o. It's making me feel better just talking about it with you guys. Anyway, just really quick, because I want to end. Saw The Holdovers on Sunday. That movie can suck it. I don't know. Everybody's like, oh, you're going to love The Holdovers. That girl, the woman who won Best Supporting Actress, I don't know what her is, Joy Division Brown or something. I don't know what her name is. She's all right. I mean, I don't know who else was deserving of the Oscar that year, but she's all right. It was, oh, you got to see it. It reminds me of you, David, because you smell, you have a lazy eye. I'm like, what? Come on. But he was a teacher, so I guess now. And I guess, I look like, are you kidding? The movie's just okay. I didn't love it. I'm like, this is what the fuss is about? Are you kidding? Are you kidding? Nothing's beaten Poor Things yet. I still haven't seen American Fiction. I'm waiting. Anatomy of a Fall was excellent, and Poor Things. Oppenheimer didn't measure up to Poor Things for me, or Anatomy of a Fall. And now The Holdovers hasn't eaten either. I also, when I got home last night, the other professor told me about the Paul Simon documentary that's on MGM Plus. And I'm like, you know, I must have a subscription to MGM Plus because it's on my cable. And I do. So I started watching it. It's in two parts, at least for starters. Total Paul Simon biography, and it's documentary. It's fantastic. The only parts that are bad is when they come live, like now, 2021, and he's making this new album. And you're like, I'm bored with that. I want to go back to where it all happens and all that kind of stuff. So it's great. So, but, you know, you start that at midnight. I started at 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, because lately when I'd come home, even after drinking, I've been up and about because I'm on a high. But I think that presidential thing tired me out so much. You listening to Paul Simon songs was not the way to go. And I totally fell asleep. And when I woke up this morning, I realized how much I had to rewind to go back to where I was like, oh, I guess I really fell asleep. You know, I woke up to, you know, it was the worst thing to watch when you're about to go to sleep. But it was really interesting. I'm glad I watched the rest, and I need to watch the second part. I highly recommend the Paul Simon documentary. The first part's all Simon and Garfunkel, so now they're going to the just Paul Simon years, how they break up, all that kind of stuff is great stuff. And he's just a fascinating individual. And that's pretty much it. That's it for this week. So next week should be very entertaining, one would think. I mean, whatever we consider entertaining. We got the Comedy Cellar Christmas party coming up, right? We have my lecturing at the old age home. It's just it's funny you're saying it that way, and then go into class. So that's a big, long day. I am apparently at this point teaching two courses next year, so I got to put that together. Then I got to put all this shit together and write a book all by May 31st. So let's see how that all works out. And if I don't end up having a heart attack, and hopefully the president won't come to town again, and that'll unstress me. Other than that, I hope everybody had a great Easter, and I hope you have a great week of the first week of April. Hopefully your weather is perfect from wherever you are, and I'll see you next week on another, I'm going to say a quote, exciting episode of Just Get Out in the City. Good night, everybody.